It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. Now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you, this is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. With me is 83% always, is my co-host,
Steven Brown.
Yeah, it's getting a little better.
Yeah, I'm going to make an effort to increase those numbers.
Today's a weird week. We actually had an interview ready to go, and then Prince died. And yeah. I was thinking about it, and it's like, David Bowie died a couple of months ago. And we talked about it, but we didn't dedicate a whole show to it. Because, you know, David Bowie was kind of this sci-fi guy, and he had done work with the Muppets, but he kind of predates that whole comic
thing. But I think I'm terrible. I don't know anything about, like, music or anything. Obviously, I know who David Bowie and Prince are. Because I think, say what you will about, I don't know, like, people go on and on about, like, Kanye West or some of these other idiots, but it's like, Kanye West is, like, one thing. He's a douchebag. David Bowie, professional douchebag. David Bowie, like, that guy did everything. I mean, and Prince, too. I mean, these guys, well, Prince played, like, 20 different instruments. Yep. Like, the guy,
he made four movies.
Yeah, and none of these guys ever had, like, scandals. Like, you hear about, like, Chris Brown beats up a girl or something. You know, it's like, these were just, like, these were actual, like, artists.
Both these guys were androgynous who sang and talked a lot about sex and yet never had a scandal.
Yeah, like, nothing maybe, crazy, you know.
I think because they put it out there, they were just like, oh, he's doing something weird with people.
Yeah.
It's like, they seem to be into it. And
that's the thing, but it's like, I don't know. It's just like They're stealing all our stars. You know, it's like, it's been a rough year.
Yeah. But I think I also wanted to talk about Prince because one of the biggest moments of Prince's career, which is weird, I mentioned on the show before, is his Batman soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which was so central to the explosion of that Tim Burton movie in 89. And I was reading articles, a lot of people younger than me, I'm Gen X and you're a millennial, it seemed like a lot of millennials hadn't heard of Prince until Batman.
Yeah, it was, I mean, Batman came out in 89. I was 3. Mm-hmm. So I remember watching it, like, as a kid, and that's probably the first time I heard Prince. And then when I got older, it's kind of one of those things I thought, like, oh, Prince did one song for Batman. He did, like, the museum scene.
Party Man.
Yeah. And then, like, I got older, and I remember we might have talked about it on the show a while ago. Like, they had him do, like, the whole soundtrack, and he made a music video where, like, he was half Batman, half Joker. I mean, it was crazy.
The video's insane. It was actually the picture I posted on the Facebook page in memorial was a picture of him half Batman, half Joker. So he's kind of Two-Face.
Yeah.
But he's not really.
He's like the real life version of, like, composite Superman, Batman.
Yes. He's composite Superman, Batman, Prince.
Which is awesome.
But it was totally his idea.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Tim Burton's like, here's what I'm thinking for the music that surrounds the film. Like, Prince is just like, I'm interested in Joker and Batman, and I will be both in this video.
I will do both.
And I will have 30 girls dressed as either Batman or Joker.
Oh, Joker.
And 5 dressed as Kim Basinger.
Right.
I love that soundtrack so much. And I was listening to it this weekend. I was listening to a lot of Prince records because I'm actually a really big Prince fan. And I'm kicking myself because I never went to go see him live. And now that's not possible.
Yeah.
Same thing with David Bowie, actually. But I first heard about Prince when Doves Cry came out. I think, like, 1999 I had heard on TV or on the radio, but when Purple Rain came out, when Doves Cry came out as a video, that was at the time where MTV had just exploded. So all the networks were creating their own video shows to compete. And there was a show on NBC called Friday Night Videos. And basically, Johnny Carson wanted Friday nights off.
Yeah.
So instead of the Tonight Show, they just ran videos for an hour, which were cheap because, you know, record companies were giving networks videos free
To promote the songs.
Yeah, to promote album sales. So they just had this bad graphic of like a record spinning and neon coming out of it. And then they would just show videos. It was the first time I ever heard Let's Dance from David Bowie. Or it was Down Under from Men Without Hats. Like all that early 80s music was the first time I saw those videos were on Friday Night Videos. We would tape it and watch it again and again all week. And I also had a little clock radio, and I would spend a lot of time in my room by myself, strangely enough.
Right.
And my memories of the early 80s are playing with Indiana Jones toys.
Right.
And listening to, like, Top 40. And when the video for When Doves Cry came out, it came out before the movie for Purple Rain. And it was just stunning. And I was never an R&B guy. I was never, like, a funk guy. But, like, it opens with him just, like, getting out of a tub and then crawling along a tile floor. And if it's anyone but Prince, you're like, you're a creep and stop it.
Right.
But the fact that it's Prince, you're just like, what's going on?
What's happening?
And it reminds me of what I used to say when I was single of, I always had my handsome friends who were successful with women give me tips. And none of them ever worked.
Yeah.
Because a line from a handsome guy works so much better than a line from an ugly guy. So, like, you're just like every cool line. Like, think of every James Bond line ever.
Yeah.
Now picture
Steve Buscemi saying it.
Yes. Picture Steve Buscemi going, I'll have a martini shaken. Don't stir it.
Yeah. It just sounds like he's like
annoying.
Yeah.
You're like, I'll fucking stir your goddamn martini. Shut up, Steve Buscemi.
Right.
But Prince had that, and Prince was 5'2". He was like Latino and black.
Yeah.
He was weird as all hell.
But he used to dress like a matador.
He's
awesome.
He dressed like a Renaissance biker.
Yeah.
And it worked. It always worked, no matter what he did. He did some crazy. There was a period where he had a beard that was only cheeks.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he had no mustache.
Right.
And he had, like, sideburns.
Stubble, though.
Sideburns. It was a very, very tight beard, but it was a full beard. The sideburns went straight down his face, then stopped, then kind of came across, then just came back up on his cheeks, went down his cheeks, and then stopped before it hit his mouth.
Yeah.
Anybody wears that beard. Anybody else?
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know if it's like, you know, that Batman movie specifically, I know it was difficult to get made, and they had a lot of problems with, like, trying to distance themselves from, like, the Adam West show. Mm-hmm. And it seemed like, all right, they announced Jack Nicholson, and everyone, like, goes nuts. And
that turned,
like, oh,
it around.
But first they announced
Michael Keaton.
And everyone lost their fucking minds.
Yeah. I saw a great was it an Honest Trailer? Yeah. You ever watch Honest Trailer?
Yeah, where
YouTube?
They're like, Mr. Mom.
Yeah, they did the 78 Superman, and they did the 89 Batman to get ready for Batman versus Superman.
Yeah.
And Batman, it was great where they said, he goes, the movie that broke the internet in half before there was an internet.
Yeah.
and it starts checking off boxes like changing the costume, changing the origin, like revealing his secret identity, casting someone controversial in the role. It was like, oh, taking a white guy and making him a black guy.
Oh, because Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's true. So that movie there was a lot of anticipation.
But then I think, like, obviously I was three, so I don't know. But was, like, getting Prince to sign on to do the soundtrack, was that part of, like, the marketing of, like, hey, we're taking this movie seriously. We're getting the hottest guy. I mean, Prince was, like, top of the world.
Yes, but the most important thing about Prince signing on to Batman that you need to remember is Prince was on Warner Brothers Records.
Yeah.
So basically, Warner Brothers said, who's the biggest guy we got?
Yeah.
Once they got the Joker, they were like, we've got the biggest star in Hollywood.
Jack Nicholson do before Batman? Like, what was his big movie?
Oh, Jack Nicholson.
I know he was huge, but, like, what was his...
Well, I'd say, you know...
His biggest movie maybe before Batman.
Yeah, he's a guy that was consistently making movies since, like, the 60s.
Yeah.
Made a lot of B-movies in the 60s. He's in the original Little Shop of Horrors.
Right.
And then Easy Rider, Broken.
Chinatown.
And that was kind of an indie movie. And then in the 70s, he was doing a lot of Oscar bait movies at the time. And then he won the Oscar for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was huge.
When was that? What year?
75.
Okay.
And, you know, that's where he plays a crazy mental patient jumping around and he wins the Oscar for it. And he gets a reputation as being known to play crazy guys.
Yeah.
Then 5 years later, makes a lot of movies in between that do really well. But 5 years later, he makes The Shining.
Yeah.
And that really cements his persona. So immediately you were like, the guy from The Shining is the Joker.
Yeah.
And that made you think about it differently than Cesar Romero.
Right.
But even up to that point, he had been making like big hits and big hits and big hits. Like The Witches of Eastwick was a big hit before. It's not well remembered now, but it was a good movie and had Michelle Pfeiffer and Cher and Susan Sarandon in it.
Yeah.
He made a movie with Meryl Streep called Ironweed. I was actually a big Nicholson fan in the 80s. That was one of the things that was interesting to me about Batman was the buildup to that Tim Burton movie. I liked Tim Burton because I loved Pee-wee and Beetlejuice. Liked Michael Keaton from those
Beetlejuice
movies.
Beetlejuice was before Batman?
Beetlejuice was before Batman. Tim Burton actually says that they had given him the job, but they didn't make it official until they saw how much money Beetlejuice had made. If Beetlejuice had bombed, they probably would have taken it away.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But Batman was only his third movie.
Yeah.
And Nicholson had been in Terms of Endearment, which was a big movie for him. And he was just the biggest thing going. And I was a big fan of Nicholson. I was a big fan of Prince, like building from Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Up.
And when was Purple Rain? What year?
Purple Rain's 84.
Okay.
It's like the same year as Ghostbusters.
Is it?
So if you turned on the radio, you would hear When Doves Cry. And Ghostbusters,
the Ghostbusters theme
over and over and over. Yeah. And some Huey Lewis in the News would be
That's awesome.
that was your radio. That was my clock radio.
Yeah.
But Warner Brothers, I think once they got Nicholson, they realized it was a big thing. There is a great documentary on the Tim Burton Blu-ray about how this movie got made, was that Michael Luslan, who's
guy who teaches that class. He was like the first guy to teach an accredited class on comics.
Right. He got the rights to Batman when nobody wanted it.
Yeah.
And shopped it around. And they had almost set it up, I think, at Universal. And then Warner Bros. Was like, whoa, we own DC Comics. Bring it back.
Yeah.
But they weren't interested in doing it until somebody else was interested.
Yeah.
And once Superman was a hit, like immediately we were like, well, we should make Batman. But then it still took 10 years.
Yeah, I guess that's what's crazy is the gap between Superman and Batman is years.
And there's
there's
really no other superhero movie between.
Well, yeah, there's Superman movies, but
right, they're sequels.
Yeah, they're all sequels and none of them are great.
But it's crazy. I was just it's crazy how long it took them to figure out superheroes would sell. Cuz after Batman, like I think you and I were having this discussion because you were watching The Phantom.
The Phantom was back on Netflix, which no matter what anyone says, it's a good movie.
Yeah, that's what you say. But there was this weird, like, they got totally the wrong message. We were talking a couple weeks ago how movie studios are getting the wrong message. They're like, we need to make superhero movies rated R now.
That's
because
a really
of Deadpool.
Good point. Yeah, it's like they've never been good at it. They always get the wrong, like, they take away the wrong concept for what, like, hey, dark and gritty is the way we should go. Make Superman dark and gritty. And it's like, no, that wasn't the message of Deadpool. The message of Deadpool is be true to the character and it'll be a good movie.
And the message they got coming out of the Tim Burton Batman was like, people really like characters from the 30s.
Yeah.
And then
the Phantom, the Shadow,
Dick Tracy.
Yeah. They all got movies and it's
they
like,
all had these huge big budget movies that nobody wanted. And for some reason,
I love all three of those movies though.
Marvel couldn't get a movie made, but for no reason they made a Flash television show the year after Batman.
The
John Wesley Shipp show.
The Flash, the live action show, came out in 90?
90. It came out right after Batman. But they didn't think that was a movie.
Yeah.
It was weirder.
Yeah, it's weird that they...
It was like the other DC characters...
Yeah,
no,
wait.
But you know what? The Phantom, that's going to be the thing.
Yeah, like, I much rather would have seen a Flash movie and a Phantom TV show. Like, the Phantom, you think, would have been easier to do as a TV show because it's pretty much... It's pretty much Zorro, right? It's a guy in a costume. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That was a show on TV. They could have just made
like
the Phantom show and then made the Flash the movie. Like, why didn't they make Flash a movie? Like, why were they like, TV?
But that's what... I think nobody really understood why Batman worked. And they especially didn't know why it worked because they didn't know why Batman Returns didn't work.
Well, didn't they kind of
They blame Tim Burton.
Realized it was Tim Burton. I mean, he got a little
Tim Burton-y
with that movie.
That's why I love it. I love those Tim Burton movies because they're so weird, because he doesn't quite get it. And the Prince soundtrack is so weird coming out of that movie, because that movie's like, it's very stylized. It's very much set in the 30s. Everybody has fedoras. It's like Batman the Animated Series.
Even the backdrops for all the Gotham, what the city looks like.
Like industrial, heavy, dark. Everyone has like this pancake makeup because they never see the sun.
Yeah. And all the cars.
All like the villain characters have red eyes because they're like, they're totally like sunlight deprived.
Yeah.
But then in the middle of it, just like 80s funk comes out of nowhere. And it's like... And I feel like when they listen to the album, they're like, well, that's a good album. They're like, where are we going to put it? Like, just keep giving it to the Joker.
Because there's no Prince song that works for Batman.
No, and he wrote like six of them.
Yeah.
There's like six songs about, there's one, The Future is about Batman, and there's a guy playing that on a radio in an alley, like when the family's crossing the street to go into the alley. And then Party Man's the big one in the museum. With Jack Nicholson dancing around trash in the museum. But then Trust is also when he's on the parade float.
Right.
Which the more you look at that movie, the less big it looks. Where it's like, in the script, Joker has this giant parade and these Thanksgiving Day balloons. And then you watch it and he's like, he's going down the same street that all of Gotham City is with one balloon.
Right.
And like a couple of balloons added in the overhead shots.
Yeah. And he's got one float. And it's a big cake.
He's on it.
Because it's like Gotham's 100th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the fake Mayor Ed Koch is very excited about it.
Yeah.
But that movie is this weird concoction of elements that should not go together at all.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of what's most impressive about it, is how successful it was, because it was kind of this like hot mess of what was... really hot at the time, mixed with what wasn't so hot at the time, mixed with
some weird guys that had their own style.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people left alone on that movie to kind of do what they do. There's that scene, they realized they didn't have a scene with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson fighting each other, like facing off.
Yeah.
Because, just, you know, at the end when they're in suits. So then they just wrote that scene in Vicki Vale's apartment where Michael Keaton just like, goes crazy and
for no reason.
No, and like I've tried to.
It's like Michael Keaton. Remember, you have a secret identity.
Yeah, that bothered me the first time I saw it. I'm like, isn't that kind of like, let's get nuts?
Yeah.
Like why? And I guess it's just to distract him, so like Joker will shoot him. But why would Joker shoot Bruce Wayne and then?
And what if he shot him in the head?
Yeah, and then also not kidnap Vicki Vale.
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't the Joker just shoot Bruce Wayne and take Vicki Vale? But then he shoots. This is in, there's another video, CinemaSins has like everything that's wrong with the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah.
And some of them are just snarky to be snarky.
Yeah, some of those are dumb.
Yeah, it's like, come on, that's a choice the director made. I can live with that.
Yeah.
But it is one of those, is like, why does the Joker shoot somebody and then just leave?
Right.
Like, he leaves by himself.
Yeah. And he left like a box with a hand in it. I don't know if it was supposed to be
with dead flowers in it.
But was that his girlfriend, like the one who's like facing?
No, it looked like a mannequin.
Yeah,
it looked like a mannequin. I think that was him like giving her a bouquet of flowers in a very Tim Burton way.
Yeah,
and that was another thing. It was like, why did you open that box? There was probably a bomb in it,
right? Because your boyfriend's crazy.
Because a psychopath just left it there, shot your boyfriend.
Yeah,
and you're like, what's in this box?
No, how much worse could this day get?
I feel like that's a decision Tim Burton would have made.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like, oh, that was crazy. All right, what's in this box? but Prince is just one element that's all mixed up. But then Prince's videos, and the Blu-ray has all his videos.
Did he make more than one video for
that? He made a video for Party Man, which was like Joker being Jack, which was like Prince being Jack Nicholson.
Prince running around dressed
as a
Joker?
Yeah, and I think he's full Joker in that.
Oh,
yep.
I didn't see that.
Except that, and I think he's in the museum, or at least like...
A set that
looks like it, but like the band's like dancing on the table.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, hail new king in town.
Yeah, I might have to see that. That looks awesome.
I'll show it to you. Awesome. It's on the Blu-ray.
Yeah.
But that was also... when I got the extended Blu-ray with... when Nika did that Batman figure, they did the Michael Keaton Batman figure, and they did a Christopher Reeve Superman figure. and the only way to get them was to buy a DVD with it.
Yeah.
And that was a Toys R Us exclusive. That was the only way they could do it because Mattel owns the license. Mattel doesn't seem to want to do it. So Nika initially, and they're actually, I've heard, don't call them Nika, they're NECA, but I don't want to. they make those 2-foot dolls. They had like the Adam West and Michael Keaton and Christian Bale. They were allowed to just shrink those down as an exclusive. So it came with the 89 Batman, which obviously I already have. But there was a second disc that talked about just the way that movie was marketed. And it made me realize there are 3 movies that changed Hollywood as a business. There was Jaws, which was a low-budget horror movie.
Yeah.
But that just
the
went.
First blockbuster.
But it just went and went and went and went. It was in the, it just wouldn't leave the theaters. And it became part of the pop culture. It was... And, you know, Saturday Night Live was doing sketches about it at the time. It was like, it was this unsolved movie. And it's still a great, great movie. But it was the first movie where, like, people just kept going and going and going and going. And then the next movie is Star Wars. And Star Wars is where they figured out the merchandising. Was maybe you got a poster. Maybe you got a t-shirt. Mego was making toys, but honestly, they weren't really making toys out of movies.
Yeah.
They made Planet of the Apes, but at that point, Planet of the Apes was a TV show. And they did Marvel in DC, and they did Space 1999, I think, were toys. Star Trek, Mego was making toys from the original Star Trek TV show before there was a movie. Nobody was really paying attention to movies, and you know, Lucas was the one who was like, "Oh, give me some of the merchandising rights," which is why he had the Empire, and 20th Century Fox did not.
Yeah,
which is why he could just move it over to Disney. He goes, "All right, you go here now." 20th Century Fox is like, let's keep putting out those DVDs till the day they tell us to not put out the DVDs. But that was the one that figured out, oh, we built this whole world. We can just do everything in this world. We can make breakfast cereals and bed sheets and shower curtains and t-shirts and pajamas and toys and toys and toys and toys and video games and board games. That was the movie that cracked that wide open. And there's still not a property that exploits that as well as Star Wars.
Yeah.
There was a time when I thought Lord of the Rings would do it, and they didn't. I think they put out a lot of product for Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, there are a lot of toys.
But honestly, what Lord of the Rings ended up going more of the Oscar bait route than the kid blockbuster route. And those are incredible films because they sit perfectly between them. But, you know, the third film wins the Oscar for Best Picture. Star Wars never did that.
Yeah.
So Star Wars figured out how to build the merchandising empire with the movie in your center. Batman figured out how to do it without the movie in your center.
Right.
Like, Batman did such a good job of putting the bat symbol on everything the year before. And I was in high school when that came out.
Yeah.
And I was already, I became a Batman fan because of Dark Knight Returns. And I was into Jack Nicholson. I was into Prince. I was reading every article I could possibly get about anything. I remember Rolling Stone showed a picture of Michael Keaton in the suit for the first time.
Yeah.
And it's that picture of him standing next to the Batmobile. And you just see the fender of the Batmobile. And I was like, he's not blue and gray. And I was just hooked into everything they did. And then it just spread where, like, the bat symbol in 1989 just became, like, the icon of America.
Yeah.
Like, everybody had... People were shaving into the back of their head.
And what's crazy is that that movie poster, just the black poster with that, like, gold symbol on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, like, I don't have, like, a history of... movie posters, but it's like I don't know any other poster that I mean that didn't even say Batman on it.
No, it had a
just
date,
had the symbol and the date, and it's like that's such an iconic like post 1989. How many movie posters have you seen that do that? But pre 1989, I don't know many posters that just had a symbol and a date.
Yeah, that was the genius of it because I think even the Superman movie they had like the silver Superman shield in the clouds, but it still said "You will believe a man can
and
fly,"
it had
Marlon Brando and Gene Hackman.
It had all this stuff on it.
It told you. It was directed by Richard Donner. It told you all about that. This was just a symbol, which wasn't even the whole symbol. They always cropped it,
which I think was like. The stroke of brilliance. It's like
you could have just shrunk it and had those symbol
fit, but they cropped it perfectly, and it's like that's great.
They said
great poster.
They said that people who didn't know that it was Batman thought it was an open mouth.
Oh, really?
With like with like a weird open mouth with like gold teeth?
Huh.
Like I obviously recognized. I was like, here it comes. It's just
yeah.
It was like, and it looked like there's just high quality version of the Adam West bat symbol. It was like, it looked like it was made out of gold.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it's not even the bat symbol that Michael Keaton wears.
Yeah.
It's like slightly different. Like the one that Michael Keaton has on his suit, like kind of has feet coming out of the bottom.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's, and it's like a different yellow. It's not even that. But they figured, that was the movie where they figured out before the movie came out. So that hype was so up there. And Prince was a big part of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Prince, the cover of Prince's album is that same bat symbol.
Yeah.
And Prince had some freaky weird album covers. If he didn't want it, he wouldn't have to.
Yeah, he could have done anything he wanted.
Yeah, he does on that album.
Yeah.
The bat dance alone, where it's just like all samples from the movie.
Yeah.
Is just crazy. In the middle of it, the one thing that's not sampled is Prince goes, "Hey, Chucky, let me stick the subwrench in the computer." And then they go right back to sampling the movie.
Yeah.
Because apparently, like, Prince went through the movie and goes, "So there's not a single line of anybody sticking a subwrench in a computer in this movie?"
Not once.
There's 2 hours of movie. There's no subwrench? All right, I'm going to have to put that in. It was such a machine that to this day, we've had this argument on the show. To this day, people can't decide if it's a good movie or a bad movie.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that people kind of argue about. And it's kind of one of the things I always point, because I didn't know this until recently. It was on, like, I don't know, a DVD or one of those like documentaries about like history of comic books, whatever. And I guess like people used to call movie theaters to ask what movie that trailer for Batman was playing before.
It's the first movie they did that.
Yeah.
I remember them doing that for Phantom Menace.
That people were like, yeah, but this movie, they were like going to see other movies just to see the trailer for
Batman.
They
would walk out.
Yeah. Yeah. They go see the trailer and be like, oh, that's awesome. All right, let's go.
Not a great trailer.
It's not.
You can find that on the Blu-ray, and it's really choppy.
It is.
There's no voiceover. There's no
it's like, not like modern day trailers.
No, there's no. Yeah, but it's not even a great trailer for that.
Yeah.
For that day. It's like, it's literally, here's all the footage we got.
Yeah.
And they did that to calm people down because people were so upset about
Michael Keaton.
That they were like, look, he's going to look badass in this. And they were like, there's no way Mr. Mom's going to look badass in this.
Yeah.
And then they showed him in the suit. They were like, look, here's the car. Here's the suit. Here's Jack Nicholson as a Joker. Here's some fights. And then people were like, oh, this is going to be good.
Yeah. That's awesome.
They talked about one of the Simpsons audio commentaries. Like on the first or second season, they were talking on an episode and they go, and they said, oh, yeah, I remember we were writing this episode. And we all took a break to go see Batman.
Yeah.
Like, the whole writing staff wanted to see Batman together. And then when we came out, we all argued about whether it was a good movie or a bad movie. And then one of the other writers was like, yeah, I don't think we ever resolved that.
I don't think anyone has.
No. And, you know, whenever it comes up to me, I go, well, I love it.
Yeah.
And that's it. I just love it.
I think it's like one of those movies, it's probably, you're not going to get like an honest opinion at a comic book store about whether or not that's a good or bad movie. Because I think overwhelmingly comic fans are like, yeah, it was a great movie because it's a lot of nostalgia behind it.
Although there was that period when Nolan was making the movies where people were trashing it.
Yeah.
People had like really turned their back in the same way that when Burton put out the Batman movie, people started trashing the Adam West show.
Yeah.
Because it was so different.
Yeah. And I think that's what it is. It's different. So they trash what came before. But I think now that we're on the other side of the Christopher Nolan movies, you know, it's kind of always ranked as one of the best comic book movies. It's like one of the biggest blockbusters they've ever done, if counting for
and
inflation.
That's another thing I noticed. Now that Batman vs. Superman is out and it's so bad, I started reading all of these articles about how good Batman Returns really is and you need to give it another shot. It's like,
really?
We needed something. We needed a bad Batman again because we haven't had a bad Batman since the 90s.
Yeah, and there's definitely problems with the Christopher Nolan movies, but they're good movies.
They're good movies.
Like,
yeah,
there's good stuff in them. They're not perfect, but it's like, I'd say the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy is better than the Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy as a whole. You know, because Sam Raimi Spider-Man, the first one's phenomenal, the second one's phenomenal, that third one is such a mess.
And they haven't aged very well.
No.
If you watch the 2002 one again, you're like, why is Macy Gray in this?
Yeah. What,
it's a little.
There's some weird stuff in it.
There's some clunky stuff in it. But going back to Prince. All of these movies are better than Purple Rain.
Yeah, I guess I didn't know Purple Rain got like a movie.
It got a movie. Well, it was a movie. I think 1999 was the album before Purple Rain, and that was a huge hit. And I mean, you still hear it.
Yeah.
You know, you hear it every New Year's. You know, now we're 17 years away from the actual 1999.
Yeah.
Which is another 17 years from when that song was right. out, because 1999 was supposed to be in the future.
Right.
We're gonna party like it's 1999. It's like future people will party.
Right.
Not 30-year-old people will party. Although to be fair, 30-year-old people. Partied way harder than now because there weren't so many, you know, laws and debts or
right, yeah.
drugs. They knew how to party.
Yeah.
And a lot of Prince's songs, like I said, Prince could sell anything. That's a lot of Prince's songs are just like, we gonna party, everybody party, party, party. And you're like, yes, we are.
Yes.
That's what Party Man is.
That's pretty that's much all what party man is. Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, new king of town, Party Man. He rocks a party like nobody can.
Yeah.
He's like Andrew WK without the metal. But Purple Rain was like, he was so big at the time that they were like, oh, we'll make a movie
about this song.
Well, we'll make a movie about you. It's like semi-autobiographical. It's such a weird movie. Mike Drucker has been on the show a couple of times. One time he came over and it was on and he had never seen it. And I got to show it to him and just watch his head try to wrap around it.
Yeah.
Because that movie completely revolves around how much you like Prince.
Right.
If you like Prince,
you love that movie.
You'll go wherever he goes because he makes some odd choices in Purple Rain that you're like, if it was just a character, you're like, you're a horrible garbage person.
Right.
but like I said, Prince can sell anything. And, I found out today, this really made me happy, is that I went on Amazon. Every Prince DVD is sold out.
Oh, really?
Every Purple Rain is sold out, both on DVD and Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And then Under the Cherry Moon, which is God horrible. It's about him in 1920s France, and it's in black and white.
Yeah.
And the only thing that saves that movie is that is the album that he put Kiss on.
Yeah.
So it's like that song was a mega hit. So the album did okay. The movie is horrible. And then in 1990, he did a sequel to Purple Rain called Graffiti Bridge, which my cousin Walker, who's been on the show, and I saw in an empty theater. And it was horrible. And literally, that came out in 1990, which means it came out a year after Batman. So Batman was such a big hit for him. They're like, so Prince, what do you want to do next? I want to make a sequel to Purple Rain, and I want to direct it. Okay.
And they were just like, sure, here's a pile of money.
Here's a pile of money. Let's put a Warner Brothers logo on that piece of crap.
Yeah.
But Purple Rain is ridiculous. Purple Rain is about like an up-and-coming rock star who they only call the kid. They don't even call him Prince. But he's fucking Prince.
Yeah.
He's driving around in a purple motorcycle. And he's got like a big cherry curl. And he like wears his guitar on his back on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Which, you know. Guitar should go in a case. Let's right, yeah, that's number one.
Right.
You know, and I put my guitars in the case. I put the case in the back seat.
Yeah.
You take a tumble off your motorcycle, you don't have a guitar anymore.
Yeah.
But like there's basically one club in Minneapolis called First Avenue, and there's only three bands that ever play there. And two of the bands hate each other.
Right.
There's like there's Prince, and then there's Morris Day and the Time. And Morris Day was this like I was a friend of Prince in Minneapolis, and he had this weird like James Brown, Otis Day and the Knights kind of like big review with everybody dancing, and he was like his character was like an egomaniac, and he had a sidekick who would hold up a big mirror on stage so he could check his hair. They were hilarious.
That's awesome.
So Prince makes him the villain.
Yeah, I mean it sounds like a '90s wrestler. You know, like
yeah, but
villain.
It's an 80s funk band,
right?
Which makes it even better. And they had this song called Jungle Love, which that was their big hit. But then it was like, so like the beginning of the movie, like everybody in this movie does one song and leaves.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why is it even worth setting up your equipment? Because Prince comes out, plays Let's Go Crazy, and goes backstage.
Yeah.
I was like, and there's a scene where the owner of the club, who looks like one of the fat boys, he's like, what's with this one song shit? And Prince walks right up to me and goes, don't worry about it. And walks away. I'm like, how is this club making any money?
That's awesome.
And then so, I'm just going to tell you the whole plot. Then so like Apollonia comes to town. And she's like this girl who comes to Minneapolis to make it. In fact, she says she comes...
That's the city where you go to make it at.
Yeah, yeah. She comes from New Orleans and goes to Minneapolis to make it. And then starts this very abusive relationship with Prince, where Prince makes her dive into a lake in the winter naked. And then, like, just yells at her a lot. And then you go home and, like, he plays tapes of his mother crying backwards.
What?
And then they... I'm not kidding about any of this. And then they make out. And then... Mars Day goes to Apollonia. He's like, I think you got a good thing going. I'm going to start a band for you. And then she asks Prince to start a band. He's like, no, I'm not going to start a band for you. And then there's this whole subplot about everyone in Prince's band, like, writing songs. He's like, I'm not going to play your music. And they're like, what about this song? Did you hear this song? Man, stop asking me to play your music. That's the whole band argument. No compromise. And so he's just horrible to everyone.
Yeah.
He's just terrible to people. He's only good to his mother because his father keeps beating her.
Jesus.
This is the movie. It's all very low budget. The other thing about it is that everyone in this movie is actually like in a band in Minneapolis, which also means that no one is an actor.
Right.
No one.
They're all musicians.
They're all like, everybody delivers their lines like this. Hey, come on, man. Let's go play some music. Man, I don't think you should treat her like that. Oh, come on, man. It's 2 hours of that. And so.
This was like a wide release type movie.
Oh, it was a hit.
Yeah, it was
everywhere. A big hit. I mean, it was, it was like an original Fast and the Furious kind of, like, let's put it out in March. It cost like $2 million, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's not a big, it wasn't a blockbuster, but it did really, really well, mostly because the album was so good.
Yeah.
Like, the album had When Doves Cry, and then Let's Go Crazy, and then Purple Rain, and you could not get away from Prince for, like, that whole year. But it's this weird movie where he's horrible, 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 and then there's these videos of these songs that are just absolutely incredible, and that you're just like, and I think that the movie's deliberately like, I will forgive any behavior to get this kind of music.
That's incredible.
And the funniest thing in the movie is there's a subplot, like, you know, the band wants, Wendy and Lisa were the two girls in his band, and they played through and through the mid-80s, and then they in real life they went off and they started their own band. But they're like the ones who are writing their own songs, and they can't get the kid to play their songs, and they're getting really frustrated. Then finally, like, his dad shoots himself or something. Like, it's not quite clear. But, like, Prince is so distraught that he goes to write a song and he puts on the tape of, like, Wendy and Lisa's tape. And then he comes out and then he plays their song. And then it's, like, this huge hit. And it's like, oh, everybody comes together. And then the problem is that song is Purple Rain, which in real life, Prince wrote.
It's a Prince song, yeah.
So Prince is like, here's a song I wrote. You say you wrote it. I say I won't do it. And then you get mad, and then I do it, and then we're friends. They said in real life he was collaborative with the band, but it's just so weird.
Yeah, well, you know.
But it's just so nuts. But it did huge.
Yeah.
And you could not get away from Prince. And I was watching last night, Saturday Night Live devoted their entire show to Prince.
I heard, yeah.
Which was great. And they showed every time he was a musical guest. So they played like 5 or 6 songs, including like last year. Which is so weird because they have like they would show like Chris Rock and Steve Martin and then some girl I did not recognize from 1980 going like, ladies and gentlemen, Prince, but he had this ability, which is why, madam, I didn't see him live. They said the two Chuck Klosterman said the two best people to ever see live are Kiss and Prince.
Yeah,
don't want to see Kiss.
Right,
but I did kind of want to see Prince. No, I can't. No, and you can't really see Kiss anymore because they keep firing each other.
Yeah.
They're like Guns N' Roses until this year. Although now, Guns N' Roses is back together, but Axl has a broken foot and is in AC/DC.
Right.
So, I don't know what that means. but they also showed, did you ever, so the first half of the show was all the Prince musical numbers. And then Saturday Night Live knows nobody really watches the end of the show. So then they just showed Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph doing the Prince show 5 times, which is the same sketch 5 times.
Yeah.
Did you ever see when they would do the Prince show?
No.
It's hilarious. Though when you see it over and over again, it's not as great. Fred Armisen plays Prince, and he has a talk show.
Okay.
And Maya Rudolph plays Beyonce, and Beyonce's the sidekick. And Beyonce interprets things for Prince. And Prince comes out, he's like, He's like, all right, yo, it's Prince show. And then they play the theme song. And then Prince sits in this big throne, and then he leans over to Beyonce. And one of the sketches, Robert De Niro's in it. He must have been hosting or something. Robert De Niro's like on the chair, like promoting Meet the Fuckers, which is funny on its own because we all know now Robert De Niro makes movies for money.
Yeah.
Like he's not the artist he was in the 70s.
No, yeah. It's all paycheck now.
He's like, yeah, Prince, I got this show. I got these movies called Meet the Fuckers. We made Meet the Parents. Now I'm making Meet the Fuckers. And it's a movie, it's out. Which is probably how he promoted it on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, exactly how Robert De Niro has done every interview
but
I've ever seen.
Then Fred Armisen leans over, whispers to Maya Rudolph. She goes, Prince wants you to sit on that motorcycle and make motorcycle noises. No, I'm sorry, snowmobile. It's like a purple snowmobile. And he goes, all right, I'm an actor. And then the rest of the sketch, they bring out more guests. They like bring out like Kenan Thompson as Star Jones. And in the back of it, and then Robert De Niro's going, vroom, vroom. Vroom is a good snowblower. It's a good snowmobile. Vroom.
And they actually got him to do this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really Robert De Niro. It's not a guy doing Robert De Niro.
Did you saw that Dave Chappelle Prince sketch where it's like the Charlie Murphy True Hollywood stories?
That's amazing. I showed that to Renee. She hadn't seen it, and it was all over the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, what are you like? And those are all true stories.
What's crazy about those is that every one of those stories is true. And I was talking to Navarez about it at the shop, and I didn't really watch Chappelle's Show when it was out, but we kept seeing clips when I was in college. They'd show like clips, and it almost exclusively was clips of like the Charlie Murphy stories. And Dave was telling me, he's like, that Charlie Murphy like worked on that show, on the Chappelle Show.
Yeah, he was a writer. He's in a lot of the sketches, but he's Eddie Murphy's brother.
Yeah.
So he was in his entourage in the 80s at Eddie Murphy's height. So all of the stories come from like people wanting to hang out with Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, and I guess those were stories he would just tell like when they were getting like lunch or something. Yeah. And they were like, we should turn these into like sketches. And they were like, okay. And then like that's like the who's the other one they did where it's like
Rick James.
Yeah, the Rick James
sketch. Well, the Rick James thing was put that show on the map. And I watched Chappelle's Show, but it was one of those sketch shows where you got one great sketch every episode.
Yeah.
And then before sketches were like, it's one of the reasons I go so crazy about Key and Peele. And Keanu's coming out next week, and I'm going to see that. Maybe we might just do
a podcast. We might do a podcast on that, yeah.
But one of the things I loved so much about Key and Peele was every sketch was good.
Yeah.
Like you didn't have to sit through like three cruddy sketches to get that one genius sketch, which not only Chappelle's Show did, but you know, most, Mr. Show and even Monty Python and Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
You know, they would always have a couple of sketches where like, I don't even know what they're doing. That's
like a really great one.
Yeah. Yeah, but the Rick James sketch is what like blew up. Like,
yeah.
I'm Rich James Bitch became that.
The sketch, or like the, it became the catchphrase. The show, yeah.
Yeah.
So but yeah, it's like that Prince one, that was like, yeah, like I said, I don't know much about like music or Prince or whatever, and that was one of the things like, it's like I think of Batman, the soundtrack for Batman, and then I think of the Charlie Murphy, Dave Chappelle ass Prince.
Yeah, which is great. Where they play basketball and he's like
humping the ball.
Yeah, but the funniest thing, it made me laugh out loud singing again. He's like, so we all, you know, Prince gives us all these t-shirts and shorts. We all ready to play ball. And he goes, they come out wearing the same shit they was wearing at the club. And
yeah.
Like, totally dressed as Purple Rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I believe it because Prince could sell anything.
Yeah.
It I could see Prince beating people at basketball dressed like
that. Well, I guess that's what
I said. And he's 5'1" and a half.
Yeah, he's like really short, but he was phenomenal at like pretty much everything this dude
pretty
did.
Much,
he was great at. And it's like, I guess that's kind of like, you know, somebody had a quote on, because like this stuff is all over the internet. And one of the things they said is like, why do people get so upset when musicians you've never met die? And it's like some quote about like, well, it's because the musicians played songs or did music that showed you who you really were, or something like this. But it is, I think, something where it's like, I get text messages. Like, I got text messages that morning. They're like, oh my God, Prince died. And it's like, we got the same text. China, the wrestler, died the same.
Oh, the same day. And Guy Hamilton, who directed Goldfinger and... GoldenEye, he directed like 5 Bond films. They all died the same day.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And but no one's talking about them.
Yeah, because it's like, and that's the thing. I think it's like, you know, when a very famous person dies on the same day as semi other famous people, it's like you kind of get, well, I can't remember who else died. It was like Whitney Houston or somebody died a couple years ago, but they died on the same day as like some other major actor or something. I can't remember. It wasn't Whitney Houston. I don't know. Somebody died and was like, it just completely overshadows like the other people that died. But it seems like more famous people are dying. Read that article? Are you
read?
I read an article, like, in baby boomers.
I read an article. I think it was in the Times about how most of our heroes are part of the baby boomer generation, and it went into detail about how the baby boomer generation created the most celebrities in history.
Yeah,
because there were so many. There were so many kids. We were at this huge amount of prosperity after World War II, so we had the time and the money to think about entertainment in a way that
we'd never done
before. We never had before, you know, like in the days of the Hollywood studio system, you know, like the Beatles were more famous than Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
Like in the 40s, people loved Frank Sinatra, but they listened to Frank Sinatra song, got on with their lives.
Yeah.
And the baby boomer generation were the ones that like, what kind of hair cream is George Harrison using?
Yeah.
You know, and Elvis starts a lot of that. Yeah. Elvis is like the first baby boomer star, and people just fucking followed Elvis. People still do.
Yeah.
He's been dead most of my lifetime.
Yeah.
More than your lifetime. And there's still people like going through Elvis.
Yeah.
And then the Beatles were their next thing, that there was so much, we had so much disposable income at that point, so we could support all of these artists.
Yeah.
So there are way more baby boomer artists than there are before, or I'd say even after. Like Gen X, my generation is when the entertainment industry collapses and contracts because the internet comes in. I'm in my mid-20s when the internet happens.
Yeah.
For real. I mean, yeah, you know, it was a server-based thing in NASA for forever.
Yeah.
But like, in my mind, Windows 95 really kicks open the internet, and that's when AOL
Everyone starts having emails.
I'm like 23.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, the internet commoditizes, not commoditizes. The internet, like, just levels the playing field for everybody.
Yeah.
It's like, everybody's kind of the same. You know, it's not like, you know, everyone has the equal amount of exposure, and interest will push you up now because everybody can be on the internet. Right. And then, of course, people start downloading the content and the money disappears.
Yeah. You figure, like, Napster and all that stuff kind of, like, crushes the music industry.
Oh, completely.
But then people's entire careers now are built on the internet. Like, I guess Justin Bieber's an internet, he's like an internet YouTube
star. Adele.
Yeah, that like
Adele came out of the internet.
Right, where it's just like the really talented, or like you said, maybe not always the cream of the crop, because I don't think I would put like Justin Bieber in the same category as like Adele, who actually seems like
Adele's
she can sing.
Amazing.
Yeah, and I think it's something where it's like it's equal parts talent and equal parts right person at the right time, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of like levels the playing field. But yeah,
if I knew what made internet popularity?
Oh, we'd all be internet famous if we knew.
250,000 people would listen to this podcast.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think a big part of it is it isn't like there isn't some magical formula to it. It's a lot of it is, I think it's just it is luck of the draw. I think,
and that happens a lot in advertising and marketing, where clients will come and go, "We want this video to go viral," and we're like, "Good luck with that."
And it's like if anyone knew how to make viral videos, there wouldn't be such a thing as a viral video, because every video would be viral.
Yeah. Well, and that's what movies try to do now, is they try to make everything a blockbuster.
Yeah.
Which,
and it's like, I don't know, like, it's the same thing we were going back to, like, the studios, is the people that are making the decisions for, like, studio companies or people that come to you guys as advertisers and say, "Hey, we want a viral video." It's like, they're the people that they don't yet understand. It's like the generation that's going to figure that out hasn't been born yet. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not your generation. It's not my generation. It's going to be whatever's next.
And
that's
also kind of the sad thing about Prince going. He had this love-hate relationship with the internet because he was so prolific. They said, I read an article today that said he has so much music that he did not release.
Really?
That we can get a Prince album a year for the next 20 years.
What?
He owned his own recording studio. He built a recording studio in his house called Paisley Park in Minneapolis. He always stayed in Minneapolis. And he was like Frank Zappa. He would just go down and record. So that was that whole thing in the 90s. Do you remember when he changed his name to that symbol?
Yeah, it was like an unpronounceable.
Yeah, it was like a cross between like a man and a woman.
Yeah,
and
so it's like that's why that like You saw it. It was like a floating around online. It was like one of those airplane things where like the jets make like a word in the sky or whatever.
Yeah.
They like put it over Minneapolis. They put his like
it's a symbol.
Symbol
oh,
he
that's
did.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. That's and that was like in the mid '90s, and then they started calling him the artist formerly known as Prince.
Yeah, because they couldn't pronounce.
Because they couldn't pronounce it, and I remember that Letterman had him on. It was like one of the first shows he did when he changed his name, and he had just a big thing. It was like Sesame Street. He was like holding up the letter N. He just held up the symbol. He was like, "Ah, it's this guy. This guy's coming." And he had this. And that week, Letterman had this bit where he would superimpose himself as the dumb guy, like in the window,
yeah,
like just giving Dave bad advice. And he goes, hey, Dave, who you got tonight? Oh, you know, we got this guy. Well, that guy, hey, do me a favor. Call him Prince. He's like, no, we can't. Hey, call him Prince. And every time I saw that symbol, I always thought, yeah, call him Prince. But the problem was he was so prolific that he would record like 3 or 4 albums a year.
Yeah.
Because he just sat at home and recorded music if he wasn't on tour. And Warner Brothers Records had a deal with him, and he comes in and he's like, I have 4 albums to give you this week. And they're like, we're not putting out 4 albums because we can't sell 4 Prince albums this week. We can, like, our books say we can sell 1 Prince album a year.
Yeah.
And it'll do really well. If you put out too much content,
yeah,
it's like we're complaining now about DC putting out 2 Batman books, Detective Comics books. I love Batman and Death, but I'm like, oh God, I might quit Batman.
Yeah, I mean, remember when they were doing weekly Batman books, Batman Eternal. It's like,
yep.
You're like you said, Batman's the best.
And you said
selling,
the sales did not hold up on
they
those.
They don't. And it's, you know, it's people, like you said, they love Prince, they love Batman or whatever, but you can't flood the market. There's
and that's what he wanted to do. So he said, well, then I'm going to start my own record company and I'm going to put out my other records. He's like, I'll give you the record I owe you, and then I'll just do all this other stuff on the side. And Warner Brothers said, no, you can't do that because our contract says you are Prince is exclusive to Warner Brothers. And then Prince, in his ultimate wisdom, went, well, then I'm not Prince anymore. I'm this thing. Which was the craziest. And he started appearing on...
what year did he do that in?
Like 94?
Yeah.
And then he started like writing Slave on his face.
Yeah.
About Warner Brothers just because they weren't putting out enough of his music. And he's always kind of had that, like, that back against the wall kind of thing. And he didn't really care about the money. So it seemed like he would have been a guy like, just get into Napster when it happened. It's like, here's all my music that no one else can listen to. But he didn't. Instead, like, he pulled all his music off Spotify.
Yeah.
Because he didn't think artists were getting a fair royalty. And Warner Brothers shuts down all the videos on YouTube. So I noticed this week when David Bowie died, everybody had YouTube videos up. Of like, have you heard this song? Have you heard this song? Have you heard this?
Yeah.
And it was all stuff from all over the place. We're not seeing that with Prince because Warner Brothers shut down all of those. And whether that was Warner Brothers doing that to all their artists.
Yeah.
Although I don't think so. Or it was Prince saying, like, don't put this stuff on YouTube. I looked for the video for Raspberry Beret, which is my favorite Prince song. And they had 2 versions. One with no audio.
Yeah.
And it was just Prince dancing around psychedelic with eyeliner.
Yeah.
And then there was one where they put, like, another song that was cheaper on it. That didn't even match. And they all say due to copyright claim.
Yeah.
So everybody was binging. People were trying to binge and they couldn't. So Huffington Post ran an article. Here's the 10 Prince songs you should listen to. And number 4 was a cover by Phil Collins. It's like, here's Phil Collins doing Purple Rain because it's the only fucking version we can find.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's crazy. So there, I will say I took a look at BitTorrent.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say how much of a look I took at BitTorrent, but usually I think the days of BitTorrent are kind of ending because people stream everything. People go to the cloud for everything. I don't like it. I kind of like to have my data with me. So yeah. I buy the phone that has 128 gigs instead of just going to Spotify for everything. These days you go on BitTorrent and there's like 5-6 seeds for things. And, you know, seeds are the guys who have 100% of the file.
Yeah.
And will upload it. I went and there was the complete Prince discography and it was 2,569 seeds.
Holy shit.
So people know that, like, oh, you can't get this online.
Yeah.
You know, people complain to Netflix for not putting Purple Rain up.
Right.
You know, yeah, whether or not they have the rights to it now, I don't know. I mean,
it's just, you know, who knows? And I'm sure it's like, you know, after David Bowie died, I remember Labyrinth and all these movies that he did went up
on Netflix?
Netflix. And it's like if an actor dies, mm-hmm. they'll put Netflix, like Robin Williams, when he passed away, they put a lot of his movies were up on Netflix that previously the week before, 2 weeks before hadn't been. But it's crazy that, is there any plans? Like, who has the rights to all If you said they can release
Warner Brothers has it again
for every year,
they said
for the
he's
next 20 years,
yeah.
new material, songs people have never heard, people would go fucking nuts.
Yeah. And I think they will. Warner Brothers has the rights to it again.
Yeah.
He sold, like, he left Warner Brothers in 96, and that's also when the Prince catalog goes berserk. That's when I completely lose track of Prince, because I was in a Prince from, like, 84 to, like, 95. And then he started putting out two CDs a year, and his first album outside of his Warner Brothers contract was called Emancipation, and it had the big symbol on it, and it was three CDs long.
Whoa.
And radio... And the problem was he didn't have Warner Bros. Behind him. Radio didn't play him.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't getting on MTV anymore. And taste had changed a little bit. You know, he was very like 80s funk, and he's very melodic, and rap had just kind of taken over. And he had a few songs in the early 90s where he put rappers on there, but it never quite fit. It was kind of like that Paula Abdul.
Yeah.
You know, like opposites attract, Paula Abdul kind of thing, with like a rapper just shows up in the middle. So he wasn't as commercially viable, and then he had also chosen a distribution method where he wasn't getting the exposure, but he just kept cranking them out.
Yeah.
Like, the guy made something like 39 albums.
That's insane.
He would put out 2-3 a year, and it's all this music that people haven't heard already.
Yeah.
So, like, and how much more is there?
I guess that's the craziest thing, is, like, forgetting even all the stuff that people haven't seen or won't be able to see, is, like, not knowing, like, there's... It's like really hard to measure like the cultural impact of like a single person, mm-hmm. because it wasn't just these large amounts of music the guy was putting out of the movies, or the cultural influence, or like his influence on sexuality or fashion or androgyny or whatever. It's like this guy had like a talent for finding talent, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was finding people that he thought was
talented. He discovered Sheila E.
Yeah, he was giving people like record deals.
He gave
Wendy and Lisa
their own record deal. Apollonia had her own record deal. Vanity passed away this year as well. He discovered Sheena Easton. He had a lot to do with Sheena Easton.
Right.
So he wrote Sugar Walls, and she's on You Got the Look. I still have a crush on Sheena Easton. That's never going anywhere.
Yeah, I don't even know who that is.
I'll show you pictures, and you'll understand.
Yeah. But I think that's what it's like. I don't know. I find it a little frustrating that there, it's like you can't really put a, there like a price tag, or you can't really measure how big of an impact somebody like Prince or David Bowie or whoever had on like culture, society, on the world, because it's like, how do you even measure?
Well, he wrote all these songs for the people that were, he wrote Manic Monday for the Bangles. He wrote Stand Back for Stevie Nicks. He wrote Nothing Compares to You for Sinead O'Connor. He wrote these songs that were even bigger hits for other people. He was in that Beatle type, Bob Dylan type stratosphere,
right?
Where he was such a part of the public consciousness. And then just the little parodies that came out. Like I'm seeing times he was on The Simpsons. The Simpsons wrote an episode for him and he didn't do it. But then they were just like, they would just draw him in episodes anyway.
Yeah.
And there's an Animaniacs joke that I've seen as a meme.
I've seen the
Animaniacs. Where they're detectives and Yakko goes, go get Prince. And Dot pulls Prince out of, from behind a couch. And he goes, no, fingerprints. And she goes, no, I'm not going to do that. And it's just, he was so famous. But because of his talent, because as I was saying earlier, in the 80s, there was... Michael Jackson, Madonna, and Prince, those were the three biggest. There wasn't really a rock act in the early 80s that was that big. Maybe The Police, but they were basically breaking up at that point. U2 had yet to get big. They were still kind of a small band. Queen was kind of done. Queen was at the end of their run, like Radio Gaga, Under Pressure is like 1980.
Yeah.
So they're not putting out stuff that people are really listening to. They're at the point the Rolling Stones are at. Like the Rolling Stones were putting out albums in the early 80s, but they weren't that big. Bowie had his comeback album around then, but it still wasn't as big as the 70s. Those three were like huge. And as I said, and for a while, Huey Lewis in the news.
Right.
but Prince was the one where his talent was really what got him. When Madonna dies, we're going to talk about like her naked book and her marriage to Sean Penn.
Yeah.
And you'll hear a couple of the early 80s songs that other people wrote for her. But she was basically there as a personality. Michael Jackson was a talent as a singer.
Yeah.
But Michael Jackson didn't write his own stuff, and he didn't produce his own stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and when Michael Jackson died, everyone talked about how quirky his personality was.
Yeah, it was like more about the caricature he became.
Yeah, like his plastic surgeries and hanging a baby off a railing.
Like the Thriller video.
And that crazy ranch he lived on with an amusement park.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about. With Prince, we're talking about how talented he was.
Yeah. Yeah, because that was like the thing. They list like all like the accomplishments, and it's like probably a fraction, obviously, what this guy did, but like how many instruments he played, all the talent he discovered, every facet of the music industry that he was involved in, producing and writing and playing music and instruments and all that stuff. It's like, well, you don't really see anybody else like that. Like, I don't know anyone else current who's working now that you're like, oh, yeah, this guy does everything. This guy or this girl is as talented as.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys I hear that about, but they don't have the legacy yet. Like, I hear that about Pharrell Williams, that he's written a ton of songs, and he's really talented.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Franz Ferdinand is really prolific. But those guys aren't deep enough into their career to have that kind of legacy yet. Yeah. I mean, we're looking at, Pharrell doing Happy is Prince doing Let's Go Crazy. That's the beginning of Prince.
Right.
You know, that's the beginning of at least 10 years of Prince at his peak. And then there's another 20 years, as I said, of him putting out 3 albums a year. How many great stuff is in there? That was one of the interesting things about the Saturday Night Live performances, was they showed a bunch of later performances from like 3-4 years ago. And I'm like, I don't know what the name of this song is. I've never heard this song, but this song is incredible.
Yeah.
So I'm like, how many more are there?
That's the thing that really blows my mind is, like you said, if they have enough material to put out an album a year for the next 20 years. So that's 20 albums. You figure like, what, 12, 14 songs an album maybe?
Yeah, usually, yeah.
So, I mean, that's...
There's hundreds of songs.
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
And how many of those will never get to be a hit? How many of those will never be heard? How many of those will be game changers?
And how many of those are still in a vault?
Yeah.
That he didn't even release.
Right. And, you know, like if this guy was recording or still as recently as 2 weeks ago, writing songs or working on music or playing instruments and recording, what do you call it? The music, but not the lyrics or whatever. It's like, I mean, this guy might have been just going up until a week ago.
Right. And it looked like he was in great shape. I mean, we don't know. There was an autopsy. At this point, they haven't revealed what it was. We know that his plane made an emergency landing in Illinois Friday, and he was rushed to the hospital. And they said it was the flu, which could have been covering for something more serious. I mean, with David Bowie, it was a shock because we didn't know he had cancer for a year and a half.
Yeah. And then didn't he do the same thing where he recorded like this album? And
well, he recorded basically his own funeral album because he knew. I don't think Prince knew. No, Prince just came off like a couple of live engagements.
Yeah.
Maybe there is, like we said, there's all this music.
She's really into David Bowie and she hasn't been able to listen to his newest album yet because it's like,
it's going to be tough.
Yeah. Cause it's like, he knew what he was doing. Yeah, he had this plan.
It's a beautiful record. I listened to it like 5 times
in
a row the week it came out. So it's definitely worth listening to, but she might need someone to hold her hand.
Yeah.
It's not going to be
easy.
That's
what I'm saying is I think stuff like this is like the impact these people have is so much bigger than I think we even understand as a culture.
Right. I'm trying to think what's a great gateway into Prince. And we'll leave with that. I mean, obviously we talked about Batman.
Yeah.
We talked about Purple Rain. My suggestion would be there was a show called Muppets Tonight. In the 90s, they tried to bring the Muppet Show back, and it didn't work. I think it might have been more successful than this version of the Muppets, which we don't know if it's coming back yet.
Right.
But Prince hosted a Muppets Tonight, and he rarely did television. Like, when he did television, he played a song, and he got out of there. But, like, he did the sketches with the Muppets, and there's a clip going around of a Muppet video with Prince. Doing a song called Starfish and Coffee, which is a song from Sign of the Times, which I love. And I don't even think it was a single. I think they just did it because it fit with the Muppets.
Yeah.
But that's been going around on YouTube. And as I said, there's not a lot of prints on the internet. Like you kind of have to buy it and search it out. But if you want to see a condensed prints and in an accessible way. That's not a 7-minute live track or Purple Rain where people are doing very bad acting jobs. Although I recommend Purple Rain. Check out Google Muppets Starfish and Coffee. I'll post it on our Facebook page too. Walker just posted it on my page, so I know I have it.
Yeah.
That's probably a great place to look at them. You're not as versed, but what did you want to watch when you heard he died?
Batman.
There you go.
Yeah, that's like I said, that's like when I think of Prince, I think of Batman.
Well, when you think of Caffeinated Comics, please think of Not In My Book on Twitter, because that's the feed. Go to our Facebook feed. We'll be posting more Prince. And listen to us on iTunes. And I've been getting more and more messages of people that don't want to listen on iTunes or don't have Macs. You can listen to us on Stitcher. Or you can just go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com and listen to all 170 episodes of the show anytime. iTunes tends to drop us off after the most recent 50. So, and Steven?
You can always find me at Chimera's Comics, 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not In My Book production.
Take that!